comes in and then.
Rushing, if it helps just in that, so it's Michael Bloomfield in the ambulance service, if it helps just in your decision, I've only got 45 minutes to 2:45, so just maybe help plan the time if that helps, please.
Yes, and I think the Southern Trust staff are in the same position, unfortunately, because we're under huge pressure today, so if we could finish by 2:45, that would be great.
Okay. Well then, just wait till I get the actual agenda up so I'm doing it right for everybody. I know councillors are very keen to be able to just hear where we are at the minute. Right, okay. Okay.
One other thing, Chair, just before we start, we're not quorate at this stage, so we can't, unless more councillors come on, we can't make decisions at this meeting, but I think it's an information session anyway. So.
It is an information session, and I know there is another meeting earlier on. I don't know if it has yet completed. Has it finished, Michael?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, it has. It's just finished. So there may be a few councillors grabbing the coffee or something before they come on. So.
Okay. Well, look, for the other councillors out there, bear in mind that we are under fairly tight time restrictions. And I know we have a number of concerns. I think we will just go on. And at this stage, it is just purely about information anyway. We're not going to be making any decisions. So if everybody is content, we'll just go ahead with the update from the ambulance service first and foremost.
Okay, thanks, Roisin. We don't have a presentation such as myself and Rosie Byrne, who's the Director of Operations. So we sent a letter back on Friday in response to your specific questions. Those were on two main areas, the impact on the ambulance service in relation to the temporary changes at Daisy Hill, and also in relation to, in the southeastern division, the transfer of patients between the Down and the Ulster. We also give a more general update as part of that in response to the request just about the pressures our service is under and what we're trying to do to address that, in particular to increase resources. So I think it's probably most useful use of the time just to allow you and members to ask questions rather than us to rehearse what was in that letter, unless there's a particular issue you would like us to comment on first. But other than that, Rosie and I are happy to take any questions.
Okay. Well, I know we have raised a number of issues at meetings, which unfortunately, you know, yourselves weren't there. So I am going to throw it open to councillors. I mean, I think we all share the same concerns. So we'll throw it open to councillors to try and get as much information and from you as possible. Any councillors want to put a question in at the minute?
Yeah, Chair, just on that letter, we've nothing sent to us as councillors on that.
Yeah.
Got a response to question from the Southern Trust, but I'm not aware of the response from NIAS, Michael. And that is the key question for us as councillors was the impact on the ambulance service when you're transferring patients with these temporary measures. So if we can get a brief update on that, that would be really appreciated.
Okay, Rosie, do you want to?
Yeah, I'm happy to come in on that, Michael. So yes, when we sent through, and apologies, it was late on Friday afternoon, just given some operational pressures that we're managing ourselves, obviously. What I felt was a very comprehensive response from Michael as our chief in relation to the specific questions that you asked. But in relation to the destination triage tool for acute surgical presentations in the Daisy Hill catchment area, both myself and Nigel Riddle, as our medical director, have had a number of meetings with the Southern Trust in relation to identifying how this can be best managed, with recognising the challenges that Daisy Hill have with their acute surgical cover. There are key principles within the destination protocol, one being that patients with time-sensitive conditions receive definitive care in the shortest possible time. The second being patients with potential surgical diagnosis who are appropriate for assessment in Daisy Hill will continue to be assessed there to determine if a hospital admission is required. I'm very cognizant, the third principle being that the impact of these changes on NIAS resources is minimised to minimise and the ability for us to maintain our 999 response time in the local area. So on the advice of our medical director, with conversation with Southern Trust Medical Director, we have identified key time critical presentations that it's very clear where they need to go. We link that in with our major trauma centre, etc. So I think we have a very clear pathway in place now. As I said, a number of meetings and discussions to agree.
Rosie.
And apologies if you haven't all received that letter. I think the letter addresses the queries.
Rosie, no, we haven't yet received that letter, which is unfortunate. But, you know, from my point of view, we are very aware of the difficulties faced by the ambulance service in terms of having, you know, resources and staff and whatever else. And the way this was explained to us by the Trust was that this really was 5 or 6 patients per day that would normally present with needing abdominal surgery and that they would be moved on to Craigavon. Now, I mean, realistically, you know, you're talking about an ambulance taking somebody on out the road to Craigavon, offloading that patient, signing them over. If there's no queue of ambulances and that's all done quite speedily, you would effectively be taking an ambulance would be covering those duties pretty much for the equivalent of a full day.
Yeah.
So can you just answer, you know, and I'm not, I hope you don't think I'm being rude, Rosie, but we need to really understand, we're not trying to see, you know, are you getting any extra resources to make up the shortfall of that ambulance being effectively removed from covering other incidents in the southern area? Are you getting any extra resources to help you while this situation continues?
So as an ambulance service, no, we are not getting additional resources, but what we have agreed and with the triage tool and the protocol that we have developed with our colleagues in the Southern Trust is that these patients who need to go to Craigavon from the Newry and Mourne area, around Dizzy Hill area, etc., they are not going to join an ambulance queue at an emergency department. They are going straight to a ward. So they're not joining a queue. So everything is to minimise any impact that is on us as an ambulance trust. In addition, and I'm sure Melanie and Maria will want to come in on this, that the Southern Trust have secured themselves additional resources outside of ambulance, outside of NIAS, whether that's independent providers, etc. So not every patient who presents at Daisy Hill and needs to go to Craigavon needs to go in an ambulance. So some of those can go with family, friends, etc. But I know Southern Trust have also secured additional resources themselves that is not impacting on the cover that we need to provide in the local area. But Melanie and Maria may well want to comment on that.
Rushing, could I just add one point to that? Just to clarify, because the nature of your question was such, I wouldn't want it to be misunderstood that the ambulance service has asked for something and haven't got it in terms of being refused additional funding to put on additional resources. Even if we were given additional money currently and this year has not been a constraint. Our constraint is the number of staff who we have in order to put cover. So any day in the southern, what we call our southern division, which is co-terminus with the Southern Trust, so it includes the stations of Armagh, Dungan and Craigavon and Newry, we aim to put out between 11 and 12 ambulances during the day, between 9 and 10 at night. Our cover in the southern division is pretty good. The next 7 days, it's 94% across the entire 7-day period. That's fairly typical, but that's heavily reliant on staff working overtime. On top of that, we bring in some voluntary and private ambulance providers. If we needed more money to increase that, we would be able to get the funding. The constraint, the limiting factor for us would be there's nobody else out there. Our staff are already working more overtime than we would ideally want them to be working, and we fully exhaust the voluntary and private providers most of the time. So just want to clarify, it's not a lack of funding that has prevented us putting on additional response to this. It's the fact that there are not staff out there.
Okay.
I think as well, I'm Marie O'Kane, I'm medical director in the Southern Trust, and cover for the chief executive, and you will maybe know Melanie from before, and Melanie will be able to give you a lot more detail on this. But essentially, you know, our aspiration within this as well was to try and keep emergency ambulances for emergencies. So again, in terms of trying to encourage people to look at other means of travel other than by ambulance, that's a regional approach, but also then to think about the ambulances actually being kept for the sickest patients. What we've done is very much in line with that, but Melanie will be able to give you a bit more detail.
Okay. Melis, just want to give us a detail of what, from the Trust perspective, of what has been put in place. And then I see also the Councillor Declan McAteer wants to put in a question.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Chair. So basically, as part of our plan with NIAS in the outset and trying to prevent any unnecessary impact on NIAS, we put in place private ambulances, having them on board at Daisy Hill Hospital, so that if somebody needed transferred who didn't need an emergency ambulance response through NIAS, that we could put that transfer in place ourselves. We have also looked at family transfer, and some of these patients require to be admitted or to be seen in the ambulatory area, but actually don't necessarily need transport via an ambulance. So there have been some parents, there has been some self-transport used, and also our private ambulances to pad out the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service. And I think that the point that was made about the direct admission to the ward, the patient presents at Daisy Hill, is accepted for an admission to an inpatient in Craigavon.
Senior moment, Melanie.
Yep, senior moment. No, yes, they're going directly to the ward.
Yes, and they're not joining a queue.
So they don't have
the emergency department, Melanie. Yes.
Just lost my train of thought. But they don't have to join the ED ambulance queue if there is one at Craigavon Hospital. They go directly to the ward. Similarly, our ambulatory patients, who are the patients who will be seen by the surgical team and who may not need to be admitted, and in many cases from Daisy Hill have not needed to be admitted, they can go directly to the ward, to that ambulatory area of the ward. The numbers, that just for numbers when we're on to it at the minute, actually Daisy Hill ED over the past 3 week period up until St Patrick's Day, which is the last data point we have. So the first 3 weeks, we had 66 calls to our surgeons from Daisy Hill ED. And of those, 40 were admitted, 11 were able to be ambulated through the ambulatory unit, and some just needed advice or follow-up. So we were quite happy to see the numbers that, on average, we're hitting about 4 referrals a day. Now, there are peaks and troughs in that on any given day, but we are having a good impact in terms of the patients arriving in Daisy Hill and the numbers needing to be transferred to Craigavon. Thank you.
Thanks, Melanie. Declan, you want to come in with a question?
Yes, thank you, Chair Rushing. Yes, it's just you were saying there that there's no issue around funding of ambulances. The whole thing is about getting them staffed. Is that right? That's what I take from your...
And I would need to clarify that, Declan, in year only. So we need substantial additional recurrent funding. We put a business case into the department in December for an additional 320 staff to significantly increase our staffing right across Northern Ireland. Also, I have to say, to be able to respond to changes such as this. There's a clear transformation programme. There will be changes in service provision right across Northern Ireland. That will, on some occasions, involve longer transport times. So we need to be resourced for that. So we've a very substantial business case in for funding to do that. What I'm saying, in the current year, When there is additional non-recurrent money for us to do more overtime working and to bring in privates, money has not prevented us. There has not been a time when we would have brought in more staff if only we'd have had the money during the current year. So just to clarify that.
Yeah. So in that vein, at the end of the day, we, as outsiders looking in, I do take it then that journeys that are made by an ambulance between Daisy Hill and Craigavon and vice versa all put pressure on your service. Isn't that correct?
Well, they do. When we've got the sort of numbers I said there of 11 or 12 ambulances during the day, we never, ever have a time when there are ambulances sitting waiting for a call anywhere across the whole of Northern Ireland. We always have calls waiting, being managed by our control room. So obviously, when ambulances are either on longer journeys or the much bigger problem for us, queuing for extended times outside emergency departments, they're not available to respond for calls. But that's why I think the approach that's already been described by the Southern Trust that turn these ambulances around quickly that go from Daisy Hill to Craigavon and get them back is very helpful. I would rather have them doing that than sitting for 3 or 4 hours outside an ED.
And I think, Michael, it's important also to recognise, maybe Declan, that our divisions don't solely serve just that division. They work across divisions.
So it's very
controlled within our control room. The dynamic sort of flow of where crews respond to.
Yeah. So look, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not going to say it now, but I'm working on something at the moment in terms of all that and the cost of it and the issues surrounding it and the implications of it all, the transfer system. And so I'm just trying to put something together, and I wonder, is it possible to put an estimated cost on per ambulance trip? Has that figure ever been done between Daisy Hill and Craigavon and vice versa? If I could get that information, I will actually be using it later on in something I'm doing with the Trust, etc.
Well, that's something we'd need to look at there, and we don't have.
But could you come back to me on that?
It will be difficult to give some sort of an average cost because it really depends how long the ambulance has to wait. How do we compare that in the past when they might have waited at Daisy Hill for a couple of hours to hand their patient over? So it's not just as straightforward as that, but we'll take a look and see what we can do.
Yeah, and I know it's in its context, but the biggest context really is the fact that you're under pressure at the end of the day having to do these journeys and other journeys as well with the number of staff you have, etc. And as you say, you've nothing settled idle. So if there's anything at all that is done in the future that frees up those ambulances by organisational means or whatever, then I presume you would welcome that.
I certainly welcome anything that increases our capacity to be able to respond to calls more timely. As I say, the biggest factor on that right now across the region is time lost outside ED. You'll see in our letter when you get it, and apologies you didn't get it before today, February 22 was our worst month in terms of hours lost outside EDs. Again, this is across Northern Ireland. We lost the equivalent of 32% of our plant capacity, which is equal to 35 12-hour shifts a day. That's the single biggest thing at the moment that is meaning our response to calls waiting in the community is being compromised and is taking much longer. So that's the thing I'd like to see progress on, as well as an overall increase in our investment in our service to expand. I think what's been put in place in relation to this arrangement between Daisy Hill and Craigavon, bearing in mind the very real pressures at Daisy Hill, it has been an effective response, and that is not having the same impact on our response times as overall ambulances sitting outside ED.
I think, Michael, it's important to note that's a regional position. That is not specific to Southern Division area.
Yep.
That's across the region that we're experiencing that.
Yep.
Look, okay. I know whenever we first became aware of the situation of the changes to emergency service within Daisy Hill, we were very concerned about the effect that it would have on the ambulance service. And what we're being told basically here is that we are well aware of the difficulty with the staffing and the recruitment of staff and an ageing staff that are due to retire and trying to get the new paramedics and new trained staff in to counterbalance that. But the trust is saying that, you know, they have found other means to deal with this particular situation only, that is not adding additional pressure onto yourselves, and you're content that that is the case, that this is working well for you, but you still have all the other pressures that you have had and continue to have as an emergency department. And the queuing of the ambulances is certainly the most difficult and the most costly in terms of time. Councillors, if anybody wants to say anything, will you just put it into the chat? Could I ask maybe, you know, if the Trust could bring us up to date as to where we are in trying to address the issues regarding the consultants and the vacancies within the consultants, and how we might try and get those emergency surgeries back to Daisy Hill. Where are we with the staffing issues?
Melanie, do you want to update in relation to that? Yeah.
Thanks, Maria. Chair, just to say, we have commenced a project oversight group which has had two focus points so far. The first bit has been the safe transition of the contingency plan to get us to go live, and the second bit is to look for a sustainable model of how we run actually general surgical services across Southern Trust, which includes emergency general surgery and includes elective surgery. Now, that work has started, and I know we've shared our project initiation document and a project mandate with you, so you have those papers, so I'll not rehearse those. But we're in a position now where we are meeting fortnightly to on a range of areas, including the whole evidence base around the right model for general surgery going forward. And that means we have to look at the data, the information, the evidence, the patient experience. We're working with our service users, and we have service users identified to be on our service user group for the project steering work. And we are working towards a consultation phase that will go live to a public consultation at the end of June. That will probably go through to October, and then we'll have a month to analyse that, and we will go to Trust Board at the end of October to actually discuss the feedback from the consultation and the proposed way forward as a result of that. What we're trying to do at the minute is deal with recruitment in tandem with that. Now, we have had ongoing recruitment, as you know. We have had international recruitment, as you know. Our last issue is really what a general surgeon, and I have to say, this has to be differentiated from any other emergency surgery. This is emergency general surgery. So today there could still be emergency surgery in Daisy Hill that might be gynae or might be dental or whatever. This is specifically general surgery. So as we go forward, and as you know also, there's a regional working group on this because there are a range of hospitals across Northern Ireland who suffer with the same issue of not being able to access what general surgeons going forward need in terms of the experience in the smaller hospitals. So we need a model going forward that gives our surgeons coming in the opportunity to work across our Craigavon, our Daisy Hill, our South Tyrone Hospital and have those range of experiences. So consultants need to have a subspecialty interest honoured, and we are working through at the minute with the clinical team what the gap is in Southern Trust for a subspecialty and how we would recruit. And then we also have oversight of when the new consultants are likely to be coming out of training and available. So we're trying to synchronise our recruitment drive that would try to capitalise on this, that whoever we get as we work through the new model, it will be a model that will be attractive for them for the future, and we will be able to retain them in that. In the interim, we are running with a couple of locums covering Daisy Hill, and with support from the Craigavon General Surgeons to fulfil the rota. And the collapse of the two rotas into one makes that a wee bit easier when you have 9 consultants on board instead of 15. And that is the one of the main drivers behind that. But really a sustainable model for the future going forward has to be run in parallel with the recruitment drives.
Okay. Councillors, does anybody want to ask any questions on that? I see that other meeting, Michael, is still going on, by the way. I would imagine that's why you have very few councillors on this meeting. Pete, you want to ask a question?
Yeah, Melanie, thanks for outlining. Thanks, Chair, for outlining the process. It comes through in the public consultation in June. That's key that we know that. It's all up front of when then the data kind of goes back to the trust in October. But I'm keen to maybe you can't go into any detail on this or answer this question, but are you going to be proposing a model or say to in the public consultation, or is it getting feedback generally on the issues from the public? Are you proposing a distinct model that I note you said that the model should work across Craigavon and Daisy Hill sites? So it would be a distinct model to say this is what general electives or emergency surgery will look like going forward in our view, and that's what you're consulting on? Or is it?
Thank you, Pete. We will be working up a range of options through the project steering group. So we'll be looking at, you know, what's the data telling us? How many beds do we need? What's our theatre capacity? What's our workforce issues? What's our infrastructure requirements? We will be working all that up and the voice of the service user and the community with that. When we go forward, we will have a range of options suggested in that options paper, and those options will have been scored based on criteria that will be agreed by those working groups. So when they go out to public consultation, there will be a range of opportunities, some of which we may well get to this is the preferred option, or we may well have a range of options that are going forward. So all of that will be contained with complete transparency for the public consultation.
Okay, and just on that, I think that when we're in that period between June and October, before it comes back, it's out for public consultation, that we convene this board again, and we have, you know, a meeting that, you know, is not restricted in time. A lot of people are feeding their issues consultation through us as councillors, and we're usually, you know, constrained by time here in these meetings. So I think in the consultation phase, although we'll all be feeding into the consultation ourselves and encouraging people to feed into the consultation, we would like to be able to raise questions when we have those distinct options in front of us. Or a distinct model with the evidence base behind it so that we can ask questions back and forth.
And we will welcome that. We will put out a full community engagement plan to allow us to make sure that we can hear from every art and part of the Trust, because it isn't just about the Newry and Mourne down area. It is the bigger Southern Trust catchment we're trying to get at here. So we will have a full engagement plan, and we will welcome that engagement.
Good. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Melanie.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's a piece of work to be done in terms of everybody reassuring the public. And I think, you know, the big concern is that we hear so many horror stories about the ambulance wait, you know, and we understand how difficult it is. You know, Michael or Rosie, where are you in terms of recruiting of new paramedics? I know obviously the new university courses have started. You know, is it starting to filter down through into, you know, people actually taking up full-time permanent positions, or is that still going to be a year or two off before you start to bear the fruit of that?
The new BSc degree at Ulster University, the first people won't come out of that chair until June 24. And even at that stage, they are what's known as newly qualified paramedics, which needs a further year of on-the-job training, if you like, before they're carrying out the full scope of practice. So it'll be a while before we see the benefit of that. We have just started about a month ago the final group of 40 student paramedics that we are allowed to train ourselves. The changes by the regulator, or sorry, the registering body, that this is the final cohort. So we will have those 40 staff out by around Christmas time. Then we will have to wait until June 24 until there's any further supply of paramedics. We'll obviously try in between to do some external recruitment from further afield, which we do a couple of times a year, but fairly small results. You know, we get single figures each time, six or eight. So that will be an issue for us. Overall, at the moment, our staffing position against our funded establishment is reasonable. We don't have too many vacancies, but so those training courses are just about covering people who leave during the year. Our big issue is we have a large number of people, and have had for the best part of 2 years, but certainly the last 6-9 months, we have a large number of staff off at any one point of time for COVID related reasons. Either they have it or they're self-isolating for a period of time. So at any time we have somewhere between 15 and 20% of our staff not available, which is why we're so reliant on our other staff working overtime. The bottom line is, and it's been recognised, and I've you know, briefed this, the council members on this several times before. The bottom line is, we do not have anything like the number of staff we need to provide the service we should. So we've got to differentiate between the number of staff we have against the money we currently have. And broadly, you know, we've got that. We haven't too many vacancies because we keep filling them through training. And the real issue, the reason why people are waiting too long, elderly people who fall, possibly with a broken hip, could be waiting anything 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. It is appalling. Rarely a week goes by when I do not sign a complaint letter to somebody for that, and I find it very hard. That is not the service that Rosie or I want to provide. But that highlights the fact that, and it's been accepted by the Department of Health, we need an additional 320 operational staff. I'll not call them paramedics because they're not all paramedics. It's a mixture of paramedics and emergency medical technicians. We need an extra 320 to be able to provide the quality of service right across Northern Ireland, including, importantly, in rural areas where our waiting times are more challenged. We need that in order to hit the response time standards. Those are not targets plucked out of the air because they're nice to do. The reason we're meant to get to somebody with a stroke or a heart attack within 18 minutes is because clinically that gives them the best chance of an outcome. Their Category 2 calls and our response times for Category 2 calls are currently way above that, you know, quite often 30 minutes plus on average. And there are times when individual calls could be taking an hour for a Category 2. And for Category 3, things like an elderly person who's fallen should be 2 hours, and quite often it can be 5, 6, 7 hours. So with a business case with the department, the whole budget position that you'll all be as familiar with as me probably means right now that is a very difficult position heading into April. I had really hoped that from the start of April we would start getting funding through, significant funding through over a number of years to increase our staffing. As of yet, we've got no indication of that whatsoever.
I think, Michael, it's important for council members to understand that, you know, we have had these conversations with the health board, with the at departmental level. We have briefed the health committee on it, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we've been very open and honest and transparent in the challenges that we face. So, you know, we are trying to do our best to bring any influence that we can bring to bear to progress and move forward with that, recognising the financial challenging situation that we all face. So, you know, if members can bring additional influence, absolutely, we would really appreciate that. But we have escalated our concerns at the highest level that we can.
Michael, just one other question. You know, for as long as I have been a councillor, be quite honest, you know, the ambulance service has been in a very, very difficult place. And, you know, at this stage, we only ever seem to be treading water. And how many young people or not so young people are joining, are in each class or each year of that degree course? How many people actually are eligible to apply? You know, is it something that we could be putting pressure on that class size is expanded, even if it's only for, you know, a 5-10 year period? What is the intake into that annually, do you know?
If you're talking about the BSc, the new BSc from Ulster University, the annual intake to that is 50. Now, the university will have rules around how many people can be on a programme, and indeed their capacity to deliver that. That requires a lot of input from us to provide practice placements, and that is going to be a big challenge for us. By year three, we'll have 3 years' worth of students looking for practice placements in the ambulance service, and that is very challenging for us. So they've got 50 per year. 40 of those are for people who just applied through the university process like anybody else, and 10 of them will be for NIAS staff who want to progress to be paramedics. The course that started in Ulster University in September, and Rosie and I went up and met those new students on their first day in September, they had over 600 applicants for that. Ulster University said it was the most, or one of the most heavily oversubscribed courses they have ever had. So there's a big, big interest out there. It's the same when we advertise directly for people to come in as ambulance care attendants who work in the non-emergency side but can progress into the emergency side. We've had over 1,000 applicants for, you know, when we have got 40 people who we can take in and train. So our in-house training programs, whether they're ambulance care attendants, emergency medical technicians, that's about 40 in each class as well. The Ulster University degree for paramedics is 50 each year.
Okay, thanks for that. Councillors, have you any more questions that you want for Rosie or Michael? Oh, everybody's sort of content at the minute. From a trust point of view, is there any further updates you want to give councillors at the minute?
I think our experience to date of this has been extremely positive. It really has. I mean, a lot of the focus, as we know, has been on, you know, the transfer of patients, but actually in terms of the way we provide assessment, investigation, ambulatory management of patients in Daisy Hill has really changed quite significantly, and the patients there are, I think, getting a very comprehensive service. And certainly there's been an enormous amount of work, you know, around patient safety to make sure that patients who are kept on site are safely managed, and those who are transferred are very safely transferred and are transferred when they're fit to be transferred. But Melanie, I don't know if there's anything else. I know that you and your team have put a huge amount of work into this, and certainly I'm speaking to the clinicians and the people coming through, everybody seems very satisfied with the service.
Thanks, Marie. The only thing I would add to that, the ambulatory piece is massive for us. Patients who last week, 3 weeks ago, 3 months ago would have been admitted, the new evidence and the new patient outcomes data shows us those patients do not necessarily need to be admitted to an acute hospital bed and can be on the pathway, which is great. The other key bit here for us is our colleagues in primary care and our GPs. And we've actually been astounded that 62 of the calls that we've got to our surgeons out of the 154 have come from our colleagues in primary care. And that has been them looking for advice, given the patient profile. And we have some early indications that it would appear that they're able to work on that advice and tie directly into the ambulatory piece without, again, referring the patient to ED and potentially coming in. So we actually think there's quite exciting things happening here in how we can work differently and smarter and in a much better patient-centred way. So we're in a very early days. That's only 3 weeks data, and we're watching it. The other thing we're doing, because we're conscious we are on a learning pace here, we have a daily meeting with our ED consultant, with our deputy medical director, with our general surgeons, and with my operational team. And we look at every single thing that happened over the past 24 hours. And if the phone wasn't answered, or if somebody didn't get here fast enough, or if whatever, that we can pay attention to that and actually resolve that straight off. So we're very lucky to have that model embedded, and we're growing and learning as we go. And I think that's our overall aim in this has been patient safety, and I think that's keeping us really tight to the patient safety track.
Yeah, I suppose, Pete, do you want to come in with a question? Come on ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just on the back of what you said there, Melanie, I suppose we always focus on the negative or what's difficult. There is a lot of positive stories out there. Like over the last couple of weeks, two families that were absolutely astounded by the level of, you know, the acute care at home. I think it was exceptional in the Sleep Building area. I know we were waiting for that for a while when it was rolled out at the start, but they're good news stories. Stephen, you said, I just want to get some detail on the calls that you said there. Did I pick you up right that 62 of the 154 calls came from GPs that stopped, so where they then can take on with the treatment and it stopped people going directly to EDs? Is that what you're saying? You're on mute.
You're on mute, Melanie.
I thought I had turned that off. It may not have stopped all of them, but sometimes a GP just wants to bounce off an opinion, or, you know, is this an ambulance straight to Gavin? Is this okay to come to Daisy Hill? Is there a doorway into the ambulatory service? There are a range of different options and outcomes of that. But we're watching carefully each of those and keeping data on those, so that we know when a patient goes to their GP or accesses their GP and they've come to us and they get directly to the general surgical team, which is a big thing. They can often resolve or direct to the right place first time, or get them onto the most appropriate pathway. So it's been a mixture. They haven't all been avoided admission or ED attendance, but there certainly has been a significant positive feedback from GPs, how well supported they feel in managing those patients.
Yeah, and just briefly, because I know we're stuck for time here, but you know, that's the type of information that needs to be put out there, because you're talking, that's 40% of those calls, and that's exactly what we want. We don't want them clogging up or people sitting in the wrong place for, you know, long lengths of time. So that's something that needs to be built on going forward. I think it's, you know, exceptional to hear something like that, because I was one of the counsellors that at the start had focused on the areas of treatment, you know, the home treatment, your pharmacist first, then your GP and whatever, and trying to, because you do have people with ED, we need to break that mindset of going straight to the emergency.
And we absolutely will do that. We're just a bit cautious at the minute because that's only 3 weeks data and we want to get a bed in another while, but we certainly will progress. And as you say, when you've models like Acute Care at Home and completely that is a virtual ward in the community. So we have great community services that make it a lot easier to look after, especially our older folk at home without requiring admission.
Yeah, thank you. That's interesting. We're keeping an eye on it. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, look, you know, I'm very conscious of the time, you know, and I'm sorry we don't have longer to talk about this. As I said, this has clashed with another meeting that some of the other councillors are still on. But just from a point of view, you know, the future of Daisy Hill continues to be a major concern for the people in the area that Daisy Hill serves. I think we all realise coming out of COVID that there are going to have to be major changes and improvements to our health system and the way that people use the health system and the way people are signposted towards it. I have no doubt myself that Daisy Hill will have to be a key player in the recovery from COVID, but when we look at our waiting lists, etc. But I think we need to be, you know, proactive in sharing positive information and engaging with our community so they have that reassurance, because it is something we are all out at the minute canvassing, which will be no surprise to yourselves. And Daisy Hill is something that we get hit with pretty much every night, not necessarily in every door, but certainly on a significant percentage of them. So working collectively, cohesively, and, you know, sharing the good news as well as the bad is going to be key. And, you know, as I say, I think the world is going to be in a different place post-COVID, but Daisy Hill must be part of the delivery of healthcare in the Southern Trust. So, you know, that's really it. Councillors, is everybody else content? It is. I know we're just after a quarter to. That was the cut-off time for both the ambulance service and the trust. Is everybody content with that? Yeah.
Chair, if I could just, and I know it was up to me, it's out of the time, but if I could just add something to what you said there, especially coming up to election time and so often, and I'm not talking here about Daisy Hill, it's not my position to talk about it, Maria and Melanie, or I'm just talking more generally. So often these conversations and the way they're reported in the media turn into conversations with words used such as closure and downgrading. Yeah, I don't hear anybody in the health system talking about closure and downgrading. What we're talking is about doing things differently and using services differently to meet the very pressing needs of our population, which were bad before COVID and they're even worse now. I think collectively we've got to find a way of getting that message across more clearly to all of the public, and how we do it through the media, that things need to change. If we carry on delivering them the way they're delivered, we're not going to get the improved outcomes. But this is not about closure and it's not about downgrading of any facilities. It's how we use them most effectively as part of an overall system. We've all got a role and a responsibility to try and get that message across.
Yeah, Michael, I completely agree with you. I mean, the region needs Daisy Hill, you know, and I know there's always anxiety about it disappearing. I came from the Mater And actually, there was the same anxiety always about it, and the system needs the matter. So these smaller hospitals provide absolute stability to the rest of the service, and they allow it to function in the way it needs to. I think, you know, the beauty of a lot of the work that's been going on in Daisy Hill over the last period of time, you know, started with Pathfinder and continued on beyond that, has been that we have seen the potential for innovation and change and development. So as Michael says, it's about changing the system. It's also about improving the system. And I think certainly the way that we are trying to do things, I think will give hopefully more stability, but also better patient outcomes in the longer term, because we're making sure that we get the right person to the right place at the right time, which is absolutely fundamental to the thinking behind all of this. And I think we're very grateful to all of you for supporting Pathfinder and also, you know, bringing us into these conversations, because it's really important that the local public understands that anything to do with downgrading or closure of Daisy Hill is the last thing on our minds. What we're trying to understand is how we maximise its potential. And a lot of the work that's been done by Pathfinder in terms of stabilising the emergency department has been really, really influential in terms of giving us a very strong platform then to develop these surgical services. So again, you know, like Michael and Melanie and others and Rosie, I just want to thank you very much for your engagement with us, because this is absolutely crucial to the success of all of this going forward.
Yeah. And Roisin, if I could just add to Maria's comments to say that it's unfortunate that members present were not cited on our response that was issued on Friday. So if you want to drop me an email to make sure I have your correct email address, I will make sure that my office sends that to you and you can share it as appropriate.
Yeah, no, that's 100%. Thank you for that. Listen, thank you very much. I think, you know, it was very informative. I do think these meetings are worthwhile. I know we're all under pressure with lots of other things, but, you know, Maria, I'm going to quote you. It's about maximising potential of our health service, and, you know, that is what we're all trying to do. So, listen, thanks a million, everybody, and good luck with the rest of your day. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.